What if we designed our cities and environments to be centered around human health and well-being? Many of our cities are currently designed around the core values of efficiency, economy, and the real estate market requirements. For many cities and countries, the single metric of GDP, or gross domestic product, is used to gauge success. While GDP can provide valuable insight, I would argue that it's a limited, one-dimensional metric that fails to render the rest of the picture. Economic prosperity does not necessarily mean that a group of humans is thriving in wealth. What if there were a way to measure the health and wellness of a city or a country, and this was the prime measure for success? If there was a way to accurately measure the quality of a population's internal psychological health, I would consider it the primary metric for guiding how we design our lives and our environments. If we redefine success in this way, we would need to look closer at the primary drivers of well-being or lack thereof in cities. I believe our cities' environments and urban design should be at the top of the list. A growing field called restorative urbanism explores how urban design supports mental health and well-being. Although the urban environment's effect on our health has historically been somewhat overlooked, we are becoming increasingly aware that it has a massive impact on the quality of our internal lives. Humans invented the city to bring people together. One of our core human needs is to feel connected with others. The amount and the quality of our social interactions and relationships significantly impacts our well-being and our health. This is called psychosocial health. Feeling that you are a vital, productive, and connected member of a society helps to create a feeling of psychosocial health. In contrast, isolation, lack of contact with people, and lack of close relationships can harm one's health. If we use psychosocial health to determine our wellness, we must consider the spaces where these interactions and these connections are occurring. The design of our environment can facilitate human connection, or conversely, can support isolation. Both visual and physical connections with others are essential for our psychosocial health. Visually observing people in our cities gives us a sense of vibrancy, connectivity, and a sense that thriving life is present here. If we can physically engage with people by meeting them and having conversations in public spaces, we can build relationships and feel connected. One of the most effective ways to support visual and physical connection is to design cities that promote the simple act of walking. Walking through our cities, we can directly engage with our communities, moving through space with our bodies rather than isolated inside of our cars. One of the primary perpetrators that's been identified as being detrimental to our psychosocial health is the unbalanced prioritization and use of the car. In Jeff Speck's book, Walkable City, he elaborates on the benefits of walkable cities and how excessive vehicles and their accompanying infrastructure, such as streets, highways, and parking lots, are disastrous for our cities and our health. The bottom line is that we should prioritize humans over cars in our cities and promote walkability. In doing this, our cities would look very different. He goes into great depth on the various ways this can actually be achieved. When I think about my most enjoyable moments in cities, I think about the quiet cafes, the pedestrian plazas, walking through tree-lined parks, and dining outside. These memories are filled with vibrant people, not the car. They don't include fast-paced highways, crossing busy intersections, parking lots, or views of the street parking. The most memorable moments from all of my travels are absent of the car. Increasing walkability in our cities is a major factor in improving our overall mental health and our well-being. The study of restorative urbanism has been looking at these alternative ways beyond the reduction of the presence of the car to help us regulate our internal emotions and relieve stress from the pressure of our daily lives. Some of the methods include integrating green and blue spaces into the cities, along with play spaces, activity spaces, rich sensory spaces, and spaces promoting connection and mingling between different groups of people. Green and blue spaces are relatively straightforward and have ample evidence of promoting health in people. The implementation of green and blue spaces into cities has been something that's widely studied and covered at length. Although these ideas have many nuances and depth, of which I don't want to downplay, the bottom line is to get more plants and more water into cities. A far less known topic is considering our sensory perceptions in cities. Our sensory perceptions bring together all of our basic senses and create a holistic atmosphere that affects our experience of a place. This is a highly subjective topic, so it poses many challenges in quantifying it and prescribing scientific ways to leverage that data. Our senses collect information to create a sixth sense greater than the sum of its parts. Architects and urban designers would define this as atmosphere or ambiance. It's the melting together of our basic five senses, which are sound, light, smell, touch, and taste, with other information such as scale, orientation, perceived sense of stability, continuity, and time. It even wraps in details from our memories and past experiences. To get a more complete picture of how someone really experiences a space internally, we need to consider a much wider range of sensations beyond our basic five senses. Our brain constantly tries to interpret and organize our senses and information inputs to understand our environment better. The field is in its infancy, but many intelligent people are working to learn how to define and leverage the information to create better spaces for our cities. Reflecting on my memories, this cumulative sensory experience feels profound and intense to me. I can recall many moments where the cumulative sensory experience has become embedded in my memory as the headline vision for when I recall that specific city or that journey. These moments and experiences are stored and burned into my memory. By documenting them with photography, cinematography, and sketching, I can more accurately describe the internal experience. An exercise I've attempted is to deconstruct these experiences into their different senses and parts to gain a greater understanding of maybe why that particular moment may have had such a profound impact or lasting effect onto my memory. After understanding, defining, and creating hypotheses about their overall contribution to a memory, I can try to re-implement similar facets into our architectural work, returning those places and those experiences back to our clients and the people using the spaces. One of the most interesting studies about place and psychological health was conducted by philosopher and ecologist David Abram, who explores indigenous cultures' connection with their natural environments. He contrasts this with contemporary humans' more literal, text-based relationship with our cities. These relationships rely on sights and sounds primarily to interpret our environment. This then mutes our other senses. It's caused a fracture or a lack of connection from our natural surroundings, which he argues negatively contributes to our mental health. Connection with our natural landscapes through all of our senses once gave our ancestors a deep sense of connection to the land and to nature and the systems and rhythms of the earth. How can our cities today be designed to help us reconnect and honor those senses? More attention and consideration for all of our senses and perceptive systems may help us to feel more connected to the people and the place where we're at, thus reducing psychological fracture and the feeling of isolation. When reflecting on a city's history, we see the general trend of values and belief systems that were prioritized and shaped urban environments. Charles Duff, in his book, The North Atlantic Cities, beautifully surmises these trends as first being cities of worship and warfare early in our history, with temples and cathedrals. He goes on to say that the next phase was cities that were designed based upon commerce and industry, with skyscrapers and factories and docks. He then suggests that there's a new era of urban development that's arising. He poses the question, is there a name for the new kind of city that we're building? What are cities to be about if they're not about worship, warfare, commerce, or industry? He suggests that we're building cities of friendship and love. Although some may consider this idealistic or naive, I don't think he's far off. I do feel like we are at the new moment of reassessing our culture and our values and developing a better understanding of ourselves and our collective humanity. We have more scientific knowledge about our health than ever before, resulting in the need for us to create different types of environments that reflect a new emerging set of information, values, and culture. Our future cities will serve our physical and our mental nature. Their purpose will be to create an environment that does its best to support the emergence of people's authentic human expression. So my task as an architect is to ask, what exactly does that look like in physical form? To answer that question, I've been engaging in journeys to travel the world and observe and document how certain cities seem to support authentic human expression, health, and vitality, and those that also limit it. On this journey, I hope to find the information we can use to build environments for our future. Thanks so much for listening. If you like this message and this information, please visit us at rostarchitects.com. Thanks so much.